actually went to a concert this week. Where did I go?
You were at the White River Amphitheater in Auburn.
Yeah, White River Amphitheater. And I was there to see Soundgarden and Nine Inch Nails.
Any good atheist?
Like any good 1993 atheist, I guess.
I was going to say, yeah, that sounds like my eighth grade playlist. Or, well, we didn't have playlists. That would be my eighth grade 2-CD CD collection.
Okay, there you go. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today is Becky Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Sam.
And Dan Lombardo again. How you doing?
Sufficiently healthy.
Well, that's saying something, I guess, these days, especially given what we're talking about.
Yep.
But before we get into that, there's an elephant in the room here. Or should I say a DVD recording of an elephant in the room played in a bunch of buildings all across the nation?
Oh?
Of course I'm talking about Mark Driscoll.
Oh.
Yeah, the Seattle-based megapastor Mark Driscoll has agreed to step down from his role as leader of Mars Hill Church. Driscoll has faced heavy criticism recently from former church leaders who accuse him of bullying other church leaders. Mars Hill was recently kicked out from the Acts 29 church network Driscoll helped found and was also picketed by former members calling for Driscoll's removal. In a recorded message to church members, this is how he communicates.
Yeah, it's not live. Live
proclamation. No. It's totally Big Brother. I mean, do the
telecast kind of the floating head of Mark Driscoll.
Who would be cast in the Mars Hill 3 minutes hate?
Like a biopic?
No, never mind. It's a 1984 reference. Go read a book.
I was 3 years old.
go away. Get off my show.
No 3 year olds allowed.
Yes.
What are you guys talking? Are you not familiar with the novel 1984?
No, we're
the
trolling.
Novel 1984, yes.
Okay, I think you're trolling me.
I am.
Think she was being serious.
I was being absolutely serious.
I thought we were on the same page.
Yeah. Hey. No. Wow. I'm about ready to abort this episode right here. Driscoll said he plans on spending time with his family and God while church committee reviews the allegations against him.
Oh, the church committee has reviewed allegations.
They have. No, I was talking to Mike about this before the show, and he said it reminded him of a restaurant near his school. And it actually reminds me of, remember that place we used to go to called the Ale House?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, it's had a sign out front that said, we're coming right back. We're rebuilding. Everything's going to be great. And it's been out there for about a year and a half now.
Yeah.
Well, it still just sort of sits there. And Mike suggests that this might be what this is. He's taking a hiatus, but this is a hiatus that's going to last until the universe burns out.
Meanwhile, though, he is still getting paid his full salary while he's on hiatus, as long as he keeps cooperating with church elders.
Right. But the thing
is, for his salary, I'd cooperate.
There was new data I received mere seconds before the show began, and I'm just going to quote from this. This is from King 5. One of the pastors who signed the letter, Pastor Mark Dunford, was terminated in August 27th, 5 days after the letter was submitted, sources tell King 5. Dunford was an unpaid lay pastor at Mars Hill, Portland. Sources tell King 5 the reason for his termination was rebellion against the church. So these people who actually said, hey, the guy, you know, our big brother, kind of a jerk sometimes. Maybe this isn't how we want to be. You know, we don't want to live in a culture of abuse. Could you please stop doing that? He was fired for saying that.
Well, was he fired by his other six?
For rebelling against the church. We don't necessarily have that data, but that leads me to believe that Mark Driscoll may not be
as hiatus-y
as it sounds. You know what I mean?
It could be one lone defender of Mark Driscoll saying, why did we all do this? And six others saying, no, he really needed to take a break, so to speak.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, you know, Mr. Portland lay pastor, go the way of Mark Driscoll.
Right. And so, I mean, that's sort of the thing with these... With religions like these. And okay, Mars Hill's a cult, straight up. We're going to be working on an episode of Mars Hill, and it looks like a cult. It smells like a cult. It has, you know, ex-members, like many cults.
Ex-member support groups is extremely coercive. Stranglehold on your finances.
It's a church that tries to tell you how to run your life down to the most minute detail. For example, I acquired a set of the Green Books from Scientology this week.
Speaking of things that try and control you to the minute detail.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's basically how to run, it's a series of memos, like literally memorandum from L. Ron Hubbard in like the 60s and 50s, 60s and 70s about how to run a Scientology restaurant franchise. And
they had restaurant franchises?
Just without food.
Yeah, without food. Oh. Well,
how to run your churches.
I was going to say, I mean, I seriously missed it.
But it's got everything in there, like how to park, how to paint. Turpentine based paints can't be used inside of the St. Hill organization because it makes L. Ron Hubbard have a headache. It's like, here is how you file things. Here are the things that you have to buy in order to file things. It's every, like, the thing that a good manager would say, you know what, find something that works, you know, make an intentional decision that works in your environment. This is how you will do it.
This is the definition of micromanaging.
Yeah. And this is what cults look like, and Mars Hill is no different.
This really reminds me, actually, of the Disney cartoon Tailspin and Colonel Spigot.
Everything reminds you of Tailspin. Have you noticed this? Man in a Hawaiian t-shirt.
And here's how you salute me when I'm standing like this. And here's how you salute me if I'm sitting like that. It's just like, I don't really... I have a hard time believing that the people reading these could keep a straight face while doing it.
They probably didn't.
Yeah.
Well, most people have a religion. Dan has Tailspin.
Now I'm worried that Tailspin was a coercive vehicle towards micromanaging cartoon animals.
Only communist cartoon animals.
Yeah, only communist cartoon animals. Did Tailspin tell tell Dan how to spend his money?
No, I think it was geared towards like fourth graders, and this is prior to tweens being discovered as
a
market.
Did Tailspin tell Dan how to eat a bowl of cereal in order to be in line with the thinking of Tailspin?
I really can't answer that, but I am overly fond of Sundays that involve fireworks and also World War II aircraft for reasons I don't fully understand and can't explain, but I think my first exposure to aircraft along the sort of World War II-like era was definitely Tailspin, so it may have influenced me in the long term.
But did Tailspin cause you to stop speaking to members of your family or certain friends or anything like that?
Only during the show.
Okay, so for little half-hour chunks here and there, Tailspin is a cult.
Well, like 4-hour chunks, because, you know, when it was syndicated, you could watch it for a
Mom, you're interrupting! Shh!
And actually, Becky, I still call you Beckers from time to time, and that's definitely a Tailspin
That is
influence.
Definitely a Tailspin thing. I have to admit, you know, I guess the line between TV show fandom and cult can be a fairly thin line now and again.
Yeah. But if we, you know, we joke, but really, we don't want to do a disservice to anyone that's come out of a really coercive religious environment like that. I mean, to his credit, one of the people that catalogs and analyzes with ease is this Reverend Throckmorton, Warren Throckmorton. He is a Christian, but he has been very, very on top of all of the unfolding of Saga, all of the ex-members, the ex-pastors from Mars Hill.
Well, like any religion... ever, there are members of this church that are now atheists.
Yes.
And I hope to talk to some of them in the near term, to be honest with you. Mars Hill is a weird thing. It's another one of the things where people think about Western Washington and the Puget Sound area is groovy, hippie land where everybody's all this, that, and the other thing. But in the midst of this, one of the fastest growing churches, one of the biggest churches that you have in this region is Mars Hill. And Mars Hill is a cult, full stop. It's very strange.
Well, hopefully full stop for Mark Driscoll.
No. It doesn't look like it.
Well, if the people who criticized his hiatus are then put on hiatus, then someone's got to be criticizing that guy's hiatus. I'm beginning to think maybe that it's hiatuses all the way down. Hiatus?
Well, yeah. Everybody's like, oh, no, Mark Driscoll's not at the head of it. Mark Driscoll's not involved anymore because of this letter. But now you've got this letter, and people who wrote this letter are now being fired. Mark Driscoll went on hiatus. This guy was fired from a job he doesn't get paid for.
Fair enough.
I think the idea that Mark Driscoll isn't involved with Mars Hill anymore is laughable. He just found a boat, went on it, and is now touring the Caribbean. Another L. Ron Hubbard reference for those of you paying attention. But anyway, we have an email here. And this is a morality one, so everybody get ready. This is Susan Yay. From El Paso, who writes, if as many Christians believe a person doesn't get to heaven by works, why do Christians worry about how they and others act? It seems to me that this idea means that you can act however you want as long as you repent and believe in Jesus. What is the motivation for morality that in this worldview, and why are they so hung up on it if it doesn't matter what you do anyway? Go for it.
Yeah, I had a pastor back when I was a Christian, or trying to be a Christian, that was telling us that what was really important is that, you know, you said the prayer and confessed your sins and all that. And in this lecture, or in this sermon, he told us that Jeffrey Dahmer, the child rapist and cannibal, was in fact in heaven because he had had a deathbed confession. It just was one of those things that just struck me as weird right off the bat. Like,
right.
How? But if I, you know, it's just, and my at the time future wife and I were sitting there in the church just looking at this like, what? How, right. What? That doesn't make any sense at all. Then, I mean, it sort of spawned the same question, and I think this is a question that neither of us have ever really been able to answer satisfactorily.
I've got sort of two impressions of this. One is that there are a lot of religions that do promote good works and good acts, acting, you know, in a Jesus-like manner, things like that. A lot of the servant leadership youth group things. So there is that. But there are people that say, you know, you can do whatever you want as long as you repent, just as that pastor had told you, Dan. And you can get to heaven. And I think what that is saying is everyone who's human and has a bit of morality, right, recognizes when they do something wrong. They recognize that, you know, people
You're
mess
being
up.
Way too nice.
I am being charitable here, but everybody recognizes and feels guilty for something that they did that was wrong.
So it's okay for you to do wrong things as long as you toe the line. That's basically what this means, right?
What I'm speaking to is the psychology of a particular believer, per se.
I think you're being too charitable. Now, there's a doctrine here that happens that I see a lot in Christianity, which is once you pray the sinner's prayer, or you get dumped in the bathtub, or whatever you do, whenever you flip the switch that you go from unbeliever to believer, now you have a standard of behavior. And now that you're a believer, you have a risk of going to hell. Or you have a risk of falling away from grace or something like that.
You need an out clause.
Yeah, the most obvious expression of this is in Catholicism or in other, in the religions that say, if you've never heard of Jesus, you cannot go to hell because God isn't going to torture people who never had the opportunity to hear the story of Jesus. So what that means to me is the best thing you can do as a Christian is to tell no one.
Right?
Because then no one gets tortured. And this seems like another expression of that, where you can do, where they're basically saying, you now that you're a Christian, you have a standard of behavior that you must follow that you didn't have to follow before you were a Christian and you didn't know. So that's, I think, why what happens when they say it's by faith and not by works, but they still get up in people's cases when they start acting against morality. But let's also be honest. A big part of religion, especially organized religion, is social control, is controlling people, is making people do what you want. So it's hard to say faith not works and then not care about works, because otherwise you're not doing what it says on the tin.
Exactly. I mean, what I was trying to speak to is the question from Susan saying, what is the motivation for morality within that worldview? I think the motivation for morality in that case comes from not religion, but from understanding and feeling and of when someone does wrong by you, you want them to stop doing wrong by you. And so you invent this structure where saying, if you keep doing wrong by me, you're going to go to hell. So please say sorry to Jesus. Please repent. Proclaim your faith, and then hopefully your works will get better from that.
Yeah, I understand that you're trying to be charitable to individual religious believers, but I mean, they believe that because that's what they're being told, and they're being told if they don't believe this, they will be eternally tortured. I think that's enough.
Absolutely, and on the whole...
But I think we do need to talk about it on the level of the organization. Why is this a doctrine of the religion to begin with, and how does that doctrine interface with the individual believers? I don't think we can separate the two.
I don't think so.
I would suspect that the doctrine of having good works as a part of the faith is just sort of like a byproduct. I mean, any ideology, religious or not, that is cohesive to humans, and we need each other, we need to be cohesive,
right?
Says, you know, be kind,
at least
reciprocal altruism. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, at least maintain the cohesiveness of the group. So I haven't gotten to mention this in a long time. So we don't all get eaten by tigers.
Fantastic. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back from the break, I'm going to stop being a bit of a wackadoodle, but we are going to talk about Ebola. So get ready for some pseudoscience.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Maggie used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer. And now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
A Path Less Taken, From Ministry to Non-Belief and Beyond, is a provocative new documentary produced by Axis Mundi Media that features in-depth interviews with Calvin King, Annalise Fonza, Teresa McBain, and Rich Lyons, all former Christian ministers who are now avowed atheists. A Path Less Taken is available now on DVD or digital download from Amazon.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we're going to be talking about Ebola in a minute, but we do have some news to talk about first. And we have another Streamathon coming up.
Yes, we do.
I don't know why you guys like these things so much, but they are an effective way for us to raise funds to keep the show going. And I find them fun. I find them to be an interesting technological challenge, as well as a challenge for my body to stay up for 24 hours yammering about whatever people want me to talk about. But
well, I think some of those Scientology memoranda, they might be have some requests for dramatic reading.
Perhaps. I know I've got the one that cancels Fair Game, and by mean canceling, I mean renaming.
I'm not sure what Fair Game is.
Fair Game is a suppressive person who's somebody who doesn't like Scientology, who the Scientologists have written a memo about. Memos are like the... Writing memos is the catechism of Scientology, really. Then you can do anything you like to them. They can be hurt, destroyed, killed, whatever. And ooh, that was internal doctrine, and once it became external doctrine, they renamed it.
Wait, the memos or the Fair Game?
The Fair Game and the memos.
Oh.
Yeah. You can't do one without the other, apparently.
Wow.
Anyway, noon, Saturday, September 20th to noon, Sunday, September 21st. We're still debating whether or not we're actually going to be live that day.
For that Sunday's show?
For that Sunday. Because that's different. We usually go from Friday to Saturday, sleep, and then do an episode. But this time we're doing noon Saturday to noon Sunday, hopefully so people can catch the weird early parts of it where I'm running around with trying to make everything go. So yeah, you can look for details on askanatheist.tv. We'd also like to thank Chris from Bellevue for meeting Peggy's challenge. Chris, you stand out because... you're the only one this week. Peggy's challenge is Peggy's from Kent's challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the show on the air. If you'd like to meet the challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the friendly yellow button on the right-hand side of the page. Now, there's been a lot of news about Ebola these days, and, you know, that's a bio thing, that's a science thing, and I can't think of anybody better to talk about it than our friend Dan here.
Well, thanks. I'll be interjecting as we sort of work down through the topics. But the basic background is that the first reported cases were in 1976. It's a hemorrhagic virus, which means that it actually causes rupturing of the blood vessels, edema, and fluids sort of leaking into your tissues. There's currently no cure for it. The only vaccines are still in experimental stages, but are soon ready to begin human trials. The disease can only be contracted through direct fluid contact, that is blood, pus, semen, etc.
Okay.
It's killed 1,500 plus people to date, and they expect that it may have reached as many as 20,000 victims before the current outbreaks can be controlled.
And this is in several countries in West Africa, mostly Sierra Leone and Liberia. A few weeks ago, we talked about how, something that scary and that devastating can influence and spur strange beliefs about its cause, its cure, who is responsible for it, who can contract it, how you should treat people who have it, how you shouldn't treat people who have it. So a few weeks ago, we talked about how some of the councils of churches said, hey, everyone should have 3 days of fasting and prayer because, you know, that's going to help hemorrhagic fever virus. We've also had people that say this is a curse because of your ungodly acts and things like that. But there's also some really other weird things. That's not just by religious people saying that this is a curse or a plague. There's people that have conspiracy theories about this vaccine that's set to begin safety trials, like you said, Dan.
Now we're back to that, are we?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anytime you say vaccine and anytime, you know, I mean... There's the vaccine autism link, which just literally won't die no matter how unsubstantiated it is.
It's not dead. It never existed.
Yes.
There isn't one. What won't die is the scare.
The scare. The scare just won't die.
Can we reiterate just one more time? Vaccines do not cause autism.
Right.
There is no causal link. There is no evidence for a causal link. There never was.
After
there
has never been studies.
There's been, there was one study that suggested one, which has been retracted for being crap.
Twice.
Everybody tried to follow up on it because that's what you do in science. You try to recreate things, you try to falsify things. And guess what? It was false.
Also, the guy who wrote it was selling competing vaccines. So,
right.
So anyway, the Ebola vaccine itself right now, there hasn't been a vaccine that's been developed. It's a relatively new virus, having only been, you know, only emerging in the late 70s. But a bunch of medical organizations actually announced that there's an Ebola vaccine that's going to begin human safety trials this September. So that human safety trials, that phase one, Dan, can you talk to us a little bit about what a phase one trial means?
Sure. So basically what they're trying to do, they have already tested this vaccine in non-human primates.
Okay.
It's for two specific strains. I think the Zaire and Sudan strains of the virus. And basically a vaccine works by creating antibodies, or rather causing the immune system to create antibodies. The vaccine is a part of some of the proteins of the virus, or in some cases the full inactive virus, but that's not what's going on in this point. And once this is detected in the system, in the blood, plasma cells of your immune system start to develop antibodies or immunoglobulins, which are sort of these little Y-shaped protein molecules. And they'll actually bond to the surfaces or different parts of the proteins of the inactive virus, or in the case of a real immune reaction, the active virus. And what these little antibodies do is they flag it for destruction by other cells of the immune system. Basically, they see this tag and they know it's a target.
If I can drop into coding parlance, so it's a semaphore, make this thing go away.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. Yeah. It is a flag that says whatever this object is that is attached to this flag now, it must be destroyed.
Okay.
And there are different ways that cells will attack it. Some cells will attack it and actually inject enzymes that will kill the infected cell and prevent any further replication that way. Other antibodies will flag it for attack by phagocytes, which are very large white blood cells that, sort of like an amoeba, will actually just ingest and disassemble whatever was flagged.
So that's pretty cool. And at this point, in terms of human trials, that's phase one, that's not testing to see whether it's effective or not. It could be effective, and that's awesome.
Right. But testing to see if there's any problems.
So it's that safety test, that very right. first. And all drugs end up going through those phase one trials, right?
Correct.
So,
well, not all drugs, but we'll get to that a little bit lower in the show.
Okay. All right. you said in this case, this is actually parts of the virus, not actually an inactive form of the virus.
Right.
So you can't actually get Ebola from having this vaccine injected into
you. You cannot. No, it is a portion of the virus that is not the infectious portion. It doesn't contain the information to replicate the virus.
So anytime that you have any vaccine that's not an inactive vaccine, but little parts of it, that's how it works, right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So no needing to have any conspiracies about how this is a plot to inject us all right. with Ebola.
Obama is not trying to inject us all with Ebola in order to bring about the second coming or whatever the one we read.
Have there been like weird word numerology people trying to link Obama to Ebola?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, it's
I'm going to go find that.
Boy, go online and just search Obama and Ebola together and you'll find all kinds
this is
of garbage.
Like one of the first clips we ever showed on the show was people trying to like decode Obama's name to make him into the Antichrist. Is this just more of that? Or?
I think the funniest one that I saw was actually a graphic where there's a stock image of, it might not even be the Ebola virus under a microscope. It might be something else, but it's a pink background and these little blue viral particles or something like that, and They manipulated the stock footage or the stock photo to spell out Obama using the shape of the little proteins. So, all right. So Obama not responsible, and also vaccine not going to, you know, infect
right.
you with Ebola.
Right.
Outbreaks though. Outbreaks mm-hmm. don't happen by vaccines, but they do happen like they're happening right now.
Right. Right.
There's an outbreak in the Congo that has recently gotten some news, which is kind of scary because it's another country and it seems to not be related to the Sierra Leone and Liberia outbreaks.
Right. So that's a problem when you have a large reservoir of animals that can contain a virus without actually contracting it.
Right.
In this case, it looks like the Ebola virus is actually carried by bats, that they're the reservoir of the virus, and the bats remain infected with the Ebola but never show any sort of clinical symptoms. It doesn't actually seem to do any harm to them, but they'll continue to replicate it. And then that disease can be spread. And I want to be very specific here. This is two particular species of bats that are only endemic to West Africa. So let's cut that one off before people go around and start killing bats in the United States. They have enough problems, but we can get to that in another show. Anyway, so the bats could potentially spread this disease around with their guano, which, you know, their poo.
Right.
And then this would get picked up by non-human primates and then transmitted to humans through the bushmeat trade. So bushmeat is basically the practice of hunting wild animals and especially primates. And the meat is known in Africa as bushmeat, where there isn't always enough food to go around, as the briefest search will show.
Right.
But this trade is definitely unsustainable, and a lot of times the species that are being hunted are endangered. Gorillas, chimpanzees, bonobos, numerous other primates are hunted for bushmeat. And a big problem here is that non-human primates, and also some of the squirrels, actually, that can be found in West Africa, can carry diseases that are easily transmitted to humans. In fact, it looks like HIV may be a mutated strain of SIV, which is a very similar virus that is known to be in grade 8 populations. And it may be that through the butchering of a carcass or something like that, a person cut their hand and was exposed to this unusual mutant form of SIV that, you know, no SIV had been transmissible to humans before, and then it was. And it actually looks like now that there are at least 13 strains of HIV and SIV, some of which are very closely related, but interestingly, the HIV and SIV strains don't seem too closely related to each other, whereas HIV is in one strain will be very closely related to an SIV strain.
Okay.
So it's not like the HIV strain is repeatedly splitting in the human population, but rather repeatedly recurring from SIV, different strains of SIV, probably by the same method, by people who are either exposed to the meat or cutting up the carcass of some non-human primate.
So in this case, it actually happened with Ebola in the Congo right now, and this is sort of a similar thing of how it's repeated since 1976.
Right. Yeah, as there are five different strains now that are known, and they... the five different strains of Ebola aren't too closely related to each other, but they are certainly showing up in different non-human primates and in bat populations.
So I actually had read the story of the Congo outbreak, and it looks like that it was one woman who then had contracted the hemorrhagic fever, the disease, the virus, and then infected the hospital staff and the family members that handled her remains. And I think that one of the biggest things that WHO and Médecins Sans Frontières, so Doctors Without Borders and World Health Organization are challenged by right now is that in that area of the world, it's part of cultural practice to handle the remains of people who are deceased. And that may seem really weird and, you know, squick people out. Why would you want to, you know, handle a dead body? But that's one of the things that is really challenging health workers right now. Because I believe that at the time that a body has expired, basically, it's full of virus. It's just teeming with virus and all of their fluids.
So I know we're going to be talking about the sort of the quackery that goes on around with this. And to me, that is, quote, the fun part, unquote. This is really serious stuff. But before we get into that, what are people doing on the ground to sort of combat this? What is the process that is happening right now to contain this outbreak?
A lot of what's going on is actual physical containment and trying to prevent people from leaving areas that have large infected populations.
Right.
But that's a really difficult thing to do. There's a tremendous amount of resentment left out from colonialization, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
where, you know, you don't trust people from outside areas, especially when they come in, you know, dressed like aliens in biohazard suits.
Right.
And, you know, suddenly there's like, this infection, and now there's all these people in strange clothing that are trying to tell you what to do and trying to keep you from leaving. And if you were a person of say, lower education in one of these areas that hasn't been exposed to all this culture and technology surrounding medical outbreaks, specifically very dangerous ones, it could be an extremely terrifying situation from the inside. And maybe the last thing you want to do is comply.
Right.
A lot of the medical staff on the ground is reporting that local people will think that, hey, my family member has contracted this disease. They went into the containment and they died. They didn't come out. Clearly, it makes it worse. Why are all the people wearing biohazard suits and we can't see them? It's because they're protecting themselves from whatever bad thing they're infecting us with.
What we have now, most recently in the news that I remember, is some a missionary who contracted the disease and was shipped back to, I think it was shipped to Atlanta and the CDC.
Yeah, Emory University.
Yeah.
Two, actually.
And one of them appears to be better.
They
appear to be cured, and okay, the immediately thank God. That's a conversation for another day.
Sure,
but what did they do? What is this a new treatment or what's going on here?
Not exactly. What they did was basically provide top of the line Western medical care.
Yeah,
the kind that isn't necessarily available when you're in the middle of nowhere in a poor area. The one strange thing that was done was a blood transfusion for one of the patients, but even the doctors that administered it have said that it's unclear whether any good or harm was done by the blood transfusion, because they have a single data point on this one.
Right.
So it had been reported at some point that actually, I think Kent Brantley, the doctor, had received an experimental antiviral treatment, and it wasn't confirmed at that time. Maybe that's been debunked, but there is in development an antiviral sort of serum, not like in the, you know, the movie serum in Hot Zone with, you know, getting okay. that magic vial.
But
an interesting thing there is that it's actually being developed from genetically engineered tobacco plants.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. So here's another good thing for awesome plant
GMOs,
technology.
GMOs. Yeah.
Yeah. Tobacco is used for that a lot because it's really good at replicating things fast.
It is fast. I wonder if people use rhubarb for the same reason.
I don't know.
Rhubarb grows very quickly, but I guess it's very simple. It's basically flavored celery, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I know you're not supposed to eat the leaves. That's about
all I got. Oh, that's true. That's where all the fun chemicals are.
So, speaking of leaves, speaking of plants.
Yes.
There's some really peculiar treatments, should I say, in scare quotes?
Well, I think we're going to have to save that for the next segment. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, plants and weird stuff and why we hate humanity sometimes. Just sometimes.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Author Jim Lawrence's In the Flip-Flops of Jesus is a blasphemous behind-the-scenes look at the Christian movie business of 1950s Hollywood. When young Randy Dillard hires on at a religious film company, he learns the screenwriter is a blacklisted atheist, the key grip produces stag films, the denominational reps are gambling addicts, and the producer of the Living Savior series is Jewish. Author Jim Lawrence's In the Flip-Flops of Jesus is available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv. Or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we went into the break, we were talking about Ebola, but then something about leaves.
Leaves, yes. Yeah. Leaves, herbs, plants. So the Sierra Leone outbreak has actually been traced back to a faith healer and her funeral. So there was a local faith healer who claimed to be able to cure Ebola with herbs. Unfortunately, this woman contracted the disease when victims from the neighboring country of Guinea came to her for help. 14 people were then infected at her funeral, spread the disease. As we discussed, there's a lot of handling and touching of the body that is a cultural norm during funerals in that area of the world. So 14 new people became infected, thereby infecting Sierra Leone. Herbs. So,
herbs.
Can you cure Ebola with herbs, Dan?
Probably not. So in alternative medicine, the term herb usually refers to the leafy or stemmy or flowery part of a plant. For some reason, not the seeds, but that may be a whole other designation. And herbs are even sometimes referred to as parts of animals, like in traditional Chinese medicine, tiger bones and that kind of stuff.
Wait, tiger bones is called herbal medicine?
Seriously, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right? That doesn't have to make
sense. Well, shall we do the alternative medicine is not actually medicine? Because if it worked, it would not be alternative?
Right, yeah.
Just throw that out there?
Yeah, that's a slight Tim Minchin reference that
exactly.
I know my wife will enjoy.
Yeah.
So what exactly is an herb? Well, the definition's pretty nebulous, but there are about 1,000 quote-unquote herbs that are frequently used in alternative medicine. But as of 2010, only 156 actually had clinical trials published regarding their use, that is, their use in human beings. Of those, only 9 showed any sort of significant evidence of positive effects on any tested condition, and 5 of those herbs tested were found to be either toxic or allergenic. So herbs are problematic as medicine for several reasons. Some herbs can and do interact with other medications. In other cases, patients may replace known useful treatments or medications for serious health problems with herbs that are at best placebos and at worst dangerously toxic. This, of course, is not to mention the difficulty of establishing the purity of content in a substance that comes directly from plants, which are certainly individually variable in their properties. I could demonstrate that, in fact, the hops that I'm growing in my yard and the hops that Sam is growing in his yard,
because they're genetically exact, right?
They are identical. His hops are a cutting of mine. They are producing different amounts of phytochemicals because they're getting different soils, they're getting different amounts of sunlight, different amounts of water. So that's a big problem when you're just taking a substance from plants. Different individual plants will produce substances differently. That also complicates establishing a correct dosage because, you know, what phytochemical in, say, rosemary is the one that's going to do any good or any harm for you? And how much did this plant produce? Is it tested before it's, you know, dried and powdered and pilled? Well, it's not. And that's has to do with how the FDA sees herbs. The FDA sees them as dietary supplements, and the manufacturers of herbal remedies are not required to prove that their products are either safe or effective for treating any particular malady. The FDA does, however, have the power to prohibit the sale of a particular herbal substance if it's found to be unsafe. But the testing really isn't happening, so when would you find it to be unsafe?
So right. I think one of the examples is actually tansy extract in the U.S. In some places for a very long time, like middle-aged Europe, it was actually used as an abortifacient. And the compound is thujone, I think it is, T-H-U-J-O-N-E. And all tansy extract sold in the U.S., for instance, has to be thujone-free because that has been found to be toxic.
Right.
Whether it's been found to be an abortifacient in any clinical trials, I don't actually think so, but it's a neurotoxin. It works on your central nervous system.
Well, I guess if you die.
And, sure.
And the way that some of these problems are addressed, because there are herbs that are effective as medicines. For instance, aspirin is derived from salicylic acid, which is found in the bark of willow trees. Salicylic acid has problems that basically it's unkind to the stomach.
Right.
So by exposing it to sodium acetate, which is basically the flavoring in salt and vinegar potato chips, you get acetyl salicylic acid, which we know as aspirin, and is very effective. But what had to be done to actually control the dosage or the purity was to figure out which chemical was doing the work and then synthesize that chemical so that you can control exactly how much of it you're getting in a dose.
And that's why chemistry is so important to medicine. Is not, you know, it's not because, well, if it comes from a plant, we can't patent it.
Right.
No, it's because when it is synthesized in a designed and fully understood process, you can institute good controls.
Right.
So you don't accidentally kill people.
You know exactly what you're getting per kilogram of person. That's
right.
And that's what dosage is all about.
So unfortunately, our local faith healer was not cured by Ebola. She did contract it. She did end up dying and ending up passing on the disease. And that is one of those things that's really difficult, that people in the area may be much more comfortable and accustomed to going to faith healers or herbalists instead of seeking medical attention. I just want to mention really quickly, there was a Nigerian megapastor who tried to cure Ebola with holy water.
Oh,
he actually spent $50,000. He spent... an inordinate amount of money, actually, to send 4,000 bottles of holy water, his holy water, and $50,000 in monetary aid to Sierra Leone to cure Ebola patients.
He actually sent money?
He sent money. He sent $50,000. His actual estimated worth is around $10 million.
Well, he hedged his bets.
I did, I guess.
I can't, you know, okay, yeah, he sent holy water, which isn't going to work, but
a huge hedge, though. He also claims that his holy water can cure HIV and cancer.
Okay, retracted.
Yes.
Yeah, this guy is not cool.
So, Nigerian pastor TB Joshua, bad dude.
Oh, is this TB Joshua?
Yes, it is.
His Facebook page is amazing.
Okay.
Oh, it is so crazy.
Watch out. You might think that you can cure HIV and cancer and Ebola all at once with his holy water.
As a starter. Anyway.
So there's some awesome other plant things out there. There was actually an essentialoilsforthewind.com, which has since been taken down, this
but
website.
But not retracted.
Not right. retracted.
So they just want to pretend it didn't happen.
It was amazing. I stumbled upon it, and it was a woman saying, hey, Ebola might be coming to the U.S. How do you protect yourself? Soak your feet in cinnamon and oregano oil.
I had a lot of fun pulling this one apart. So essential oils are basically the aromatic phytocompound that a plant has produced that is gotten by distillation or compressing the plant, just pressing or macerating it, and then mixing that oil with vegetable oil or olive oil or something like that. Essential oils aren't really shown to do anything besides smell nice in any situation. There are right. extracts of plants that have been shown to work against certain situations and certain illnesses, but essential oils have not. So according to the website, the surprising oil that is most recommended for Ebola is cinnamon. It's impossible for the Ebola virus to live in the presence of pure, unadulterated cinnamon oil.
It's also impossible for your body cells to live in the presence of it.
Absolutely. Cinnamon is pretty corrosive. Even still, essential oils are not pure, unadulterated cinnamon oil. It's a very small amount of cinnamon oil. In fact, a homeopathic level dose of cinnamon oil diluted in vegetable oil or olive oil. I think you'd be hard-pressed to name any living organism that could survive in pure cinnamon oil or pure wintergreen oil, for that matter.
So there's a lot more on this site that we might get to a little bit later, or maybe in a podcast extra.
Yeah, we may continue talking about this after.
But knowing that essential oil treatments, it's for Ebola, is just patently false. So many claims there that are
right.
just, you know, taking one word, making it sound things. There's one more thing, though. You did mention homeopathic. So Natural News. Natural News was on the board with a homeopathic cure for Ebola.
Oh, why?
So homeopathy, right? Taking yeah. a small amount of your actual causative agent
and diluting it into massive amounts of water to the point where it's no longer detectable by scientific means.
So no longer detectable, but hold on a sec. Mm-hmm. You got to start with that small amount of Ebola. Natural News actually peddling, saying you need to have a small amount of the Ebola virus in order to then water it down. Super dangerous.
Extremely dangerous. And inadvisable under any circumstance.
So yeah. that one has also been pulled.
That one's been pulled because I'm guessing they don't want wrongful death suits. Because yes. I mean, there is a point where we're giving people bad medical advice, even if you're not a doctor, is actionable, is legally actionable.
So and Natural News actually does report that, oh, the author is under investigation. How about your whole site?
Yeah, the author's under investigation. The website asking for the murder of people who do research and try to help people, that's also under investigation. Natural News is Natural News may very well end up being a cult in and of itself, but there is nothing worthwhile going on there. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess the best treatment for Ebola: containment, getting attacking some of those cultural dogmas, being able to access medical care and equipment and education.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing here that we should say is if you're in the U.S., the outbreak isn't here.
Right.
You know, don't get all the sky is falling.
If you're in the U.S., you have nothing to worry about just yet.
Yeah. So, I got one more thing we need to talk about this episode. Today is it's a good episode, I think, but it's a bit of a sad day for us. Back in 2011, right in January, when our time at Scan TV up in Seattle ended, we needed somewhere else to go, or the show wouldn't exist. And a station down here in Tacoma, KLAY 1180 AM, where we've been airing every weekend ever since January of 2011, took us in and gave us a home, and we would not be the show we are today without them. Unfortunately, this is our last week at KLAY 1180, at least in this form. You may see us again. here on the station. We're still talking about it.
We're not
you don't get rid of us that easy.
Yeah.
You're not taking a Mark Driscoll hiatus, though.
No, no. We're like, Bad Penny, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm putting you on hiatus for asking that.
So there's some people I really want to thank. First, I want to thank the first guy I talked to at KLEY. That's Bruce Bond. He's a friend. He's been a source of information for me. He's helped me understand things about the industry that I didn't know before. He gets his baseball tickets, as Becky wants to point out, to the Rainiers, which, as you guys know, is the team I like. I'm very glad to have worked with him, and I will be very glad to work with him again in the future, even in the near future. I'd also like to thank John Burton, fellow fan of the religious works of L. Ron Hubbard. I don't know if fan is the right word, but he shows up at post shows. We have very similar media tastes and such. I've met some really wonderful people. Tracy Kelly, whose show I was on, She's Your Usual Tech, here at KLAY. She has her own show called Equal Time on Fridays at noon. I was on last week as a guest, and I'm going to be on this week as a replacement, as an understudy. It's a political talk show, so if you want to hear people talk about things that we never talk about on Ask an Atheist,
yay!
Yeah, you could go there. And Julie Miller, who's also a friend and was also our tech during time. There's a lot of really great people at KLAY, and we need media here in Tacoma. I live in Tacoma. I intentionally decided to make Tacoma my home. And most of the media here is pointed up at Seattle. Having Tacoma-centric media, I think, is really important. And if you're in Tacoma and you've ever thought about making Tacoma-centric media, by all means, do so. So it's been a fun time. How about you, Becky? I mean, it's some great stuff.
Oh, yeah. I had a surprise wedding ring presented to me.
That's true. Wow. Yeah.
KLAY. So
yeah, KLAY has some personal import. I did propose to you on the air in the studio of KLAY.
Yes, you did.
So the reason we're leaving... We're leaving KLAY. We're moving, and we'll be talking about it after we go off the air. So if you're on the stream, stick around with us. But it's been a fun 4 years. I've always wanted to be in radio. Always. Like, ever since I was... There's a... Somewhere in this house, I need to find. There's a small black cassette tape that's labeled the Sam Mulvey Experience. And my dad got his first tape recorder, dual-deck tape recorder. He's like, look, you can record sounds. And I'm like, really? The first thing I did was do talk radio. 5 years old. A five-year-old Sam Mulvey doing talk radio. I think I interviewed my sister's stuffed animals. I think I had music. I mean, it was that sort of thing. And if it weren't for KLAY, I wouldn't be doing this right now. And I think that's important to me. So thank you guys very much. Thank you for our time here. And like I said, we're not done. But for this week, we are. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Dan Lombardo and Becky Friedman. Our writers were Dave Brulette and Becky Friedman again. My technical assistants were Sharon Zelnowski and Rosalind Townsend. My name is still Sam Mulvey, and I'm the producer. Our voicemail is 206-420-0997. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, and you can go to... what did I miss? You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Thank you, KLAY. We love you. Good night. Sam Mulvey here.
And I'm Becky Friedman. After almost 4 years, our radio show Ask an Atheist returns to Seattle on KKNW 1150 AM on October 5th.
Join me and my rotating cast of atheists and freethinkers from around the world as we answer some of our favorite questions that we are totally not at all sick of.
Like whether atheists are even capable of feeling love or joy.
No.
Wait, what?
Catch Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey Sunday afternoon at 3 on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. Find them online at askanatheist.tv.
That's the announcement, guys. We are out of the Tacoma market for now. I very much want to come back, but we...
It's the intermission of an era.
It's the intermission of an era. We are at KKNW 1150 AM in Bellevue. I think the transmitter's on Tiger Mountain.
Broadcasting.
But you can hear us in Seattle. You guys hear it up by you.
Awesome.
Yeah, we don't get it down here quite so much. However, they're also on HD radio, which I think I'm one of the seven people in this market who's got. So
so that's coming up in October.
Yeah, our first episode back on the air in Seattle will be October 5th. And during the month of September, you're going to be seeing a lot of changes to the show. One of the things that you may have noticed in that commercial is a slight name change.
It's not the Sam Mulvey experience.
It's not the Sam Mulvey experience, but it's been pushed on me several times. Mike actually was the one who took me aside and, really, you need to do this. Really, you need to do this. This is the kind of radio show it is. But everybody else, I'd say, okay, Mike, thank you. That's good advice. But it was, a little too, egotistical for me.
Sam's just a little self-effacing.
But everybody was like, no, it's a good idea. So the name of the show going forward, starting in October, is going to be Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey.
Yay!
Yeah. It started out just because I was the guy who could operate the board. I knew how to press all the buttons at KLAY. But then after a while...
And he's been pushing buttons there ever since.
That is...
Yes. Yes, he has.
That's kind of what I do. Yeah. But we've got that coming up. We've also got some other stations. I mean, we're still going to be on the air. We're going to be on the air in WPRR in...
Grand Rapids,
in Grand Rapids. And we're going to be in KOWA. Down in Olympia. So we're still on the air. We're just not on the air in the Seattle-Tacoma region for this month. And that's going to give me some time to do some retooling. You heard a lot of new commercials. We're going to be doing a lot new. We're going to be doing a lot of new sort of sound bits. We're going to change the sound of the show a little bit without changing really the way the show is done. I like what we do.
I like what we do.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I like that I can have a show where, we can laugh about stuff.
But we can also tackle some really heavy issues.
We can make jokes about Mark Driscoll and about news, and we can make references to 1984, and then we can have really informationally dense episodes like this one. And then we can have interviews with, and make it, tie it all to a single community. I mean, this is what the show is about. I know a lot of people who listen to our show are atheists. And I love you guys. I'm doing this for you guys. Well, and me, but you too. And, but we're not the audience. The reason why we're on the air and the reason why being on the air is so important to us isn't for debate. There are people who love debate. I'm not really one of them. I just want to show people what atheists are like, and not just me. And that's why it's sort of Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. It's I'm not the atheist you are asking. I don't know if you guys figured this out yet, but I'm not the guy you're asking. I'm the guy asking.
We ask a lot of other atheists a lot of other cool stuff.
Exactly, and that's sort of it. I think it is a little bit more accurate. And I hope it doesn't go to my head.
It can't afford to get much bigger.
No, it can't. Yeah, look at this thing. But, you can't. We're on the radio. There's a reason for that.
It's like a canary melon. I wish you could all see it from here.
Well, soon it's going to be blushing canary melon.
Having Sam in the room is kind of like being on the freeway behind a semi. What is behind that massive obstructive object?
Sam actually has turned his head around very quickly and knocked me over.
I have. Yeah, that was when I realized that, my head was really, really, I thought Becky was 3 or 4 feet behind me, but she's a foot behind me. And so I turn around and I literally knock her to the ground with my head. I wasn't even trying. I'm like, is head reduction surgery actually a thing?
Trepanation.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Yeah, I've heard of that. It didn't work out. It doesn't work out too well.
We could try retrophrenology.
That's true. And that's another reason why we're changing up the post show.
Because
thing.
Of retrophrenology?
Yes.
Yes.
Because of retrophrenology.
We're all having head rubs for everyone.
No, it's not what retrophrenology means.
Yeah, okay.
All right. This may go on the air.
retrophrenology, to be specific. If you're familiar with the science of phrenology, is, feeling the lumps of someone's head to determine their personality. Retrophrenology is adding new lumps to the person's head to change their personality.
Ah.
Oh, I thought it was retro, therefore the other end.
No. I think that's rectophrenology.
Aha! So yeah, that's what's going on. We're going to be doing a new logo soon, and with new logos, we'll actually start doing the things you guys are. Yeah, we get regular, do you guys have bumper stickers or t-shirts or keychains or anything like that? And the answer is no, because we've been wanting to do our re-logoing for 3 years. We never got around to it.
There's a little initial output, you know, some initial investment there. Yeah. That's been a little hard to swing while we've been and using so much of our generously, you know, contributed funds to help sustain us being on the air.
Right, right. And that's actually part of the reason what the Streamathon is for, is there are some costs in moving markets like this. And there are costs that we haven't really faced as... It's like when you move your house.
Right.
You know, things get really...
First and last month's rent, damage deposit,
exactly.
Cat deposit.
Things get really expensive for a couple months, and we've got a lot of stuff we got to pay for. And then after that, it's going to be... It may even be a little easier. You know, we need to raise those funds, and advertising is good for about 50% of our revenue. And
I'm excited with our new advertisers.
I love our new advertising. And you know, we're going to be continuing looking for new advertisers. But like I said, we're in the middle of a move. We just gave our notice, and now we got to go. And that's what all the fundraising is for.
We are by no means saying that we do not want new advertisers.
No, not at all.
All the advertisers we can get.
Yeah. Well, there is a limit.
There is a limit. Yeah.
I don't want 40 minutes of ads and 20 minutes of show.
But the limit has not yet been met.
No, it has not. We are far from it.
So I know that there are some folks that do kind of fast forward or at least take their headphones off for the ads. Hey, tune in because they're fun stuff and it helps support them so that they can help support us.
Well, that's sort of the thing that I tell people. And I do hear both things from listeners. I hear, whenever there's ads on a podcast, I just fast forward through them. But I also get a lot of people who say, I listen to your ads because those people are supporting Atheist Media. And that's important. If you're looking for something that anybody on our show is advertising for, it would be really good for us for you to use those businesses and to tell them why you are. That does us in a lot of ways a bigger favor than meeting Peggy's challenge.
And because individuals, I mean, it's nice to know in the community, especially as an atheist, who has your back,
right?
And who doesn't.
Well, yeah, and it does us some good because it shows the advertisers that they're getting a return on their investment, but it's good for the community because it shows that, especially in America, economic force is power. If you can show that atheists are an economic force to be reckoned with, then people are going to pay attention to you in the realms of politics, in the realms of media, in journalism. People pay attention to people with money. It sucks, but that's the truth. And so there's other reasons for doing it. And that's, all right, no, I guess my advertising wonk hat needs to go away. I feel dirty. I need a shower.
You corporate shill.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I get that money from Monsanto. I figure, why not go whole hog, right?
The GMO tobacco.
Whole genetically modified hog.
The green glowing in the dark horned hog.
You could finally have green ham to go with your green eggs.
Oh, I want a glow pig.
You want a glow pig?
Yeah, I had a glow bug as a little kid. You know, the D batteries inside it. You hugged it really, really hard, and the head lit up, and it
teaches
was
you
nice.
how to behave around your pets in the future.
Yeah, squeeze the worms
until they glow.
The decorations in the studio they're not complete. There's actually there's space in the studio for glow fish. We were actually gonna have the GMO fish in here.
Really?
To sort of complete the look. But the thing is, I can't keep a freaking plant alive up here. Right. I'm really afraid of fish.
And it gets pretty warm in here.
It does. Yeah. Well, they're fish that can they're actually
zebra
very
dandles.
Well, they're tropical, yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be fine. But I also next year I'm gonna have a better cooling solution. I might actually close this off. And then we've got a closet in here and put
fascinating for our listeners.
Air conditioner in it. Like, the air conditioner needs to be in a different room with ducting into here so that the noise of the compressor isn't going to be picked up on the microphone. Well, here, just so you guys at home can hear what I'm talking about. You may have heard that on the air.
You've heard the air on the air?
You've heard the air on the air because we do turn it on in the breaks to cool it down in here. Yep. And
sometimes we forget to turn it off.
Yeah, sometimes I forget to. Actually, I regularly forgot to turn it off until I made it somebody else's job.
One thing I want to point out about the glowfish, as I understand it, they're only black light responsive.
They don't glow without the black light. They're not made of radium.
But something really cool about them is they're actually using a protein called GFP that was isolated from a hydrozoan jellyfish called Aquaria at Friday Harbor Research Labs, which is where I spent my summer last summer.
They have
a statue of the GFP protein out in front of the lab.
Nice.
It's used all over the world in all sorts of biomedical research.
I need a picture of
that. Well, and this one wasn't used for biomedical research. This one was actually developed in these fish to as a way to see, could we get it to glow in the presence of a particular environmental toxin? Hey, if your fish are good and they're non-invasive, right? Fish are hanging out. All you got to do is wave a black light
across your pond.
Hanging out with
your family.
The fishies. So you wang a... You wang a... You
yes,
wave
that's birdemic.
A wand. A black light wand. And see if your fishies glow. Then you know that the pH or, the chemical balance of your particular waterway is in peril or not in peril.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty cool sort of technology, using genetically engineered organisms in order to protect the environment.
I just think they're pretty. And I wanted them... there were two things I needed to figure out. Was, can they handle the temperature? How do I feed... Well, three things. Can they handle the temperature? How do I feed them without killing them? And how do I get the tank to be silent during the show?
Oh, that's tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's plenty of fish tank filters that say they're quiet.
That aren't. I figured I'd have to go with, like, plants or something.
Most of them are quiet for, like, a month.
Yeah.
I would like to do one downstairs, actually, that is, like, really well stabilized.
The cats are going to murder them, though.
I know. And just have the kitties be, like, you know, tennis match.
No, I'm sorry. That wasn't a euphemism. The cats will murder the fish.
And if that's why I want it, a really well stabilized
tank. There's a safe word for you. Anyway.
The cats will murder the fish?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
That's a pretty interesting safe word. I have a hard time thinking of a context where it wouldn't work. So
fair enough.
It's like an entry secret code. I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
So
careful.
There was a tremendous amount of actual awesome bad science on this essential oils thing.
Oh man. Do you want to go over some of the stuff that we skipped?
I would love to.
Can we? Yeah,
that's what this is for. We got about 10 minutes. So let's do it.
Everything on this essential oils place is saying, look, we have scientific evidence. Scientists have said, researchers have shown. And Dan, you looked into some of that research.
Oh, I did. I had a great time. Yeah, I love tearing apart bad science or non-science under the guise of science. So they have a quote here. After seeing oils work in our family for the past 9 months and finding nearly instant relief from a host of health concerns, I'm no longer a skeptic. Well, there's your problem right there. I am a believer that God-given plants from the earth have incredible properties that our bodies recognize as familiar, and they go to work quickly to heal us. Something I kind of wanted to do a side shot on here. There's a thing called the Doctrine of Signatures. Have you guys heard of this?
I've not.
It's a medieval health practice that's basically the idea is if a plant looks like a certain body part, it must be good for treating that particular body part.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just this absolutely crazy woo about, like...
So carrots cure erectile dysfunction?
More like eggplant, but yeah.
Your mileage may vary. But no, like radishes were supposed to, you know, cure red eye, you know, like,
okay.
So radish juice is an irritant, but your eyes are all red from, you know, fever or pink eye or whatever was the particular malady in medieval Europe. Let's squeeze a radish into it.
That sounds horrifying.
And fill it up with irritating alkaline juice. they'd see a plant that looks like a foot and be like, oh, well, the leaves of this particular oak are foot shaped, so it must be good for athlete's foot. So let's take this particular, you know, bark from this tree or the leaves from this tree and pack our feet in it to treat athlete's foot, which, you know, covers them with sweat and rotting leaves, which are full of other fungi. Anyway, back to the website. But I digress. So on this website, they also talked about how the essential oils could penetrate the cell walls and cure your Ebola or whatever.
Cell walls of the plant?
Human cells have membranes. They do not have cell walls. In fact,
that's what we learn in seventh grade bioscience.
No animal cell has a cell wall. That's one of the ways that you can tell an animal cell is an animal cell. Cell walls are reserved for plants, bacteria, fungi, some protists, and also archaea.
Fungi are weird.
They are. They're super cool and super weird, but yeah, it's a whole field, mycology, if you want to get into it. But plant cell walls are made primarily of cellulose, which is a sugar that we cannot digest, which is why it's obvious if you've been eating corn. Hemicellulose, pectin, while fungal cell walls are made mostly of chitin, which is a protein that outside of fungi only shows up in animals.
Yeah.
Which is,
like I said, they're
cool.
Weird.
We're way closer to fungi than we are to plants.
Yeah.
And fungi are way closer to us than they are to plants. So it's a neat thing. Cell walls of algae are made of polysaccharides and glycoproteins. And the cell walls of protists are just too diverse to name. Some of them even include silica and, calcites. Cell walls of bacteria are made of peptidoglycans, and their cousins, the archaea, have pseudopeptidoglycans and tons of other things. But the point is, essential oils will not help you by penetrating your cell wall because you do not have cell walls. And even if they did, walls...
Well, there are dividers between cells, right? It's not just
a membrane. It's a fatty lipid membrane, right?
And there's, interstitial tissues and interstitial fluids that are between your cells. But mostly they're... You kind of think of them as like a system of rubber bands. While cell walls are almost like the mortar between bricks that kind of like, hold the matrix together. Our interstitial fluids and our interstitial tissues are not that. They're stretchy. That's why we can flex our arms around like I'm doing now, but you can't see in the studio. And why
that's
trees
why you can do that.
Can't.
I'm still injured.
Oh, right. Yes.
So what does it have to do with essential oils?
So even if you're a cell that has cell walls, like a plant, that really functions as a containment that prevents the cell from bursting if it absorbs too much water or just provides structure. It really doesn't have much to do with epidemiology or the spread of disease or the absorption of medicines or other enzymes. But let's just assume for a minute that they are poorly educated in biology, surprise, and meant membranes and not cell walls when they suggested that viruses live inside the cell wall and that medicine cannot go through, but essential oils
can. They're inside the walls, man!
Because they have smaller molecules. And I'm going to tear this apart a few different ways. First, viruses don't live. Really. Viruses.
Oh, is that a closed case? Because when I was growing up in biology class, they said viruses had some of the signs of life.
They have some of the signs of life, but fire has some of the signs of life. Fire.
Are you saying that fire is alive, Dan?
Fire is actually better at self-replicating than viruses are. But that's a whole other thing. Viruses can only self-replicate on certain things. Fire can self-replicate on all kinds of stuff.
I'm
saying that fire is alive or semi-alive.
No, but I'm sensing a little opinion creeping in here.
A little bit.
Okay. No, that's cool.
There are certainly biologists who would disagree and
get down with your bad self.
Some sort of proto-life or whatever. The point is, viruses aren't like other organisms. They're kind of like little organic robots. They're very mechanical in nature. And... not too complicated for most of them. They don't have the ability to reproduce their own genome, so that's sort of the clincher. They can't really do it without a host cell. They don't have the machinery inside the virus to be able to reproduce their own genome. They can only do that with the machinery of other cells. Second, essential oils do not have super tiny particles. In fact, part of what defines an oil is that it has a rather large hydrocarbon molecule that is also nonpolar. That is, it's not charged at either end. For instance, water is a polar molecule. It's negative at one end, positive at the other. Oils are not, which is why oil and water don't mix. Oils tend to be hydrophobic, which means exactly that. Doesn't
mix
with water.
Unless you add egg and mustard, then it mixes.
Right. And lipophilic, which means that they do mix with other oils. But our cell membranes are made out of phospholipids. So oil molecules do have an easier time bonding with our membranes than large polar molecules do. But we do have a polar region between the two phospholipid layers of our cell membranes. So you can bond with the outside, but getting through all the way is actually pretty difficult. And usually only small polar molecules are able to do that.
So not essential oils.
Not essential
oils. Essential oils really, really, really have a hard time penetrating the cell membrane.
Right.
No, but they're a great excuse for owning a still.
They are a great excuse for owning a still. And the only excuse for owning a still, because all other uses of stills are illegal and no one would do that.
Water?
Is that really a still? I guess that's distillation.
Distilled water,
equipment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I use distilled water in brewing sometimes.
Fair enough.
No, absolutely.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I retract the statement.
Okay.
See, also on this website, the essential oils for the win, they said that cinnamon can treat Ebola and oregano can treat Ebola, that the essential oils of cinnamon and oregano can treat Ebola. Cinnamon does actually seem to have some antiviral properties, and it might combat certain viruses, but it doesn't seem to have been tested on any of the five strains of the Ebola virus. So I'd love to know exactly where the merchant, and yes, this is a merchant website selling essential oils,
right?
Found out that cinnamon or oregano can, quote-unquote, kill a non-alive Ebola virus. They do actually have a link to 13 studies on cinnamon oil and viruses. That is in quotes there. 13 studies on cinnamon oil and viruses. And this leads to a list of actual peer-reviewed studies in which the word cinnamon appears.
This is a fantastic...
But this is my favorite part. In four of those 13 studies, the word cinnamon is part of the common name for a species of duck, the cinnamon teal, in which avian flu was investigated. So in this case, we have cinnamon and viruses showing up in the title of the study, but it has nothing to do with cinnamon on viruses.
Wow.
It has to do with a duck being, you know, looked at for avian flu.
So,
in another five,
oh, here we go.
The word cinnamon appears as the part of the name of a species of rat that is used in laboratory experiments called the Long Evans cinnamon rat.
Let me guess, it's brown?
It is. It is cinnamon colored. It was bred to be cinnamon colored, and it's used in biomedical research. This has nothing to do with cinnamon and viruses. So, if you're keeping count here, we have four that have to do with ducks and five that have to do with rats out of 13, meaning 9 out of the 13 have nothing to do with actual cinnamon on actual viruses.
So what's the other four? The science of recipes? Or
so the other four did actually find that cinnamon might be effective in certain situations against certain types of viruses, or more specifically, the symptoms brought on by said viruses. So cinnamon can have some antiseptic qualities. It can actually have some anesthetic qualities.
That's well known, though.
If you chew on a cinnamon stick, I guarantee you your throat will go numb.
So this is kind of like, oh, I have my oral herpes outbreak on your mouth, and then if you drink cinnamon tea, maybe it's soothing.
Yes.
Ew.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually,
there's no part of that I liked.
When I was a blacksmith.
Well, good, because I really don't like cinnamon in my tea, and I don't have oral herpes. So
fantastic.
Great.
All right.
When I was a blacksmith, and I'd get a cold, and I'm working out in the forge and stuff, you know, and you still have to work anyway, even though you're uncomfortable and all that, I would actually have a cinnamon stick in my mouth, and every once in a while I'd touch a piece of the hot metal that I was hammering on to the end of the cinnamon stick. And it's not exactly smoking it. It's more like having an incense stick in your mouth, but the smoke was actually
You're a cinnamon offer.
It was numbing to the throat.
Yeah.
And it seemed to sort of clear the sinuses, but that might have been that it was cinnamon. It might have been that it was any smoke whatsoever. I don't smoke anything, so I don't really have a frame of reference for that.
Right. Are you curing Ebola, though, with your cinnamon smoke?
As far as I know, I was never exposed to Ebola in the blacksmith shop. there might be a pun in there somewhere. There might not. I really don't know. But no, that I was never treating or curing Ebola with cinnamon smoke or cinnamon essential oils. And here's another link from the website from Essential Oils for the Win, where they link to a study on MRSA, which is methicillin-resistant staphylococcus.
Wait, and staph is not a virus, though.
It is not. It is a bacteria. And furthermore, in this study, quote-unquote study on MRSA, because this was not a peer-reviewed study, what they tested was a blend of essential oils, including cinnamon, against a single essential oil. So they didn't test whether the essential oils worked better than, say, antibiotics or no treatment at all.
Right.
All they tested was this blend of essential oils versus another essential oil, both of which they sell. And strangely, they concluded that the En Garde TM blend of essential oils sold by the website, which linked there, quote unquote, kills a wide variety of pathogens in less time than traditional antibiotics, even though their tests included no traditional antibiotics and no comparisons were made in the study.
Of course. I wonder if it was pulled for because of a C&D or something like that. That wouldn't surprise me.
I'm guessing that this was just plain old not peer reviewed, that they're calling it a study the same way.
I mean, the link, because we're talking about a link that isn't there anymore.
Well, the essential oils for the win, the merchant is still there, and they still have links to all different other things. Like, didn't you know that soaking your feet in oregano can actually ward off the evil spirits?
Yeah, I mean, they're talking.
Oh, yeah, I stand in pasta whenever I'm feeling ill.
And on that note, I think since we're off the air, we're going to be meeting up at, is it the tap room today?
We are at the Harmon Tap Room at 2nd and St. Helens.
So we will be at the tap room in about 25 minutes, and I'm going to wrap this up because I want to be there, so I want to get production underway.
May I recommend the pesto for plantar warts?
Pesto for plantar warts. Is it an alliteration thing?
I'm just saying stand in it for a while and see what happens.
All right, is it cucumbers for cancer?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Alfalfa for AIDS. That?
Can we do like buffalo pizza for bronchitis?
Yeah, thank you. There we go. Wow, we invented an alternative medicine movement right here. Good night, everybody!